Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 182 of the Actual Fluency Podcast. My name is Chris Broholm, and I'm your host. It's a podcast for language learners and enthusiasts from all over the world, where we invite prolific polyglots, language specialists, and industry experts to talk about language learning methods, software, and experiences, because ultimately that is what language learning opens up, experiences. And part of my personal experience in the last year has been moving to Portugal. So obviously I'm in the midst of improving my Portuguese. So I thought, what better way to get a feeling for the language and understand it a little bit better than to invite a European Portuguese teacher to the podcast to talk about how she got her start and any tips and tricks you might have for the language, including how to differentiate the European and Brazilian variants. So the episode today is with Liz Jalma. She runs the site called Talk the Streets, which also has a very popular YouTube channel featuring a lot of great European Portuguese lessons, but she also shares content from and talking about Brazilian Portuguese. So you can get a bit of both on there, but her specialty is definitely in the European market. And the reason I found her is actually because I'm having a little bit of trouble finding European Portuguese content. I know the differences are relatively small, as we're going to go over in the episode today, but I feel like when you live in the country, it would be best to try and learn that kind of version. It would be like learning the Spanish of Spain if you're going to live in Colombia. Of course, you would get along and, you know, it's probably possible. But, you know, if you have the option, I think you should probably stick to the local version. And, you know, most of the apps and most of the websites, they might support Portuguese, but with a Brazilian focus. Occasionally, I have found apps that have specifically European Portuguese. So I am working along on it. But in the meantime, enjoy this episode and let me know who you want to hear from on the podcast. But let's go to the episode with Liz. Just a quick note, this episode was recorded in January of 2021. So if we're referring to, you know, the pandemic in a different way, or we're speaking about past events, don't worry about it. This is because we recorded this episode quite a few months ago. So enjoy. This episode is brought to you with support from Optolingo.com. This is an app that focuses on talking from the very first lesson. So if you want to avoid boring drills and grammar memorization, then give it a try. Optolingo.com. We're all good. So Liz, welcome so much to the Actual Fluency Podcast. It's really great to have you.
Thanks for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Can you start out by telling listeners a little bit about yourself? Like, what degree did you do and how did you get to Portugal?
Yeah, of course. I went a very traditional route into languages. It was what I studied at university. I studied Spanish and Portuguese. I went to Manchester University in the UK. And I just absolutely loved Spanish at school. Like, I can remember going on my first trip to Spain and it being pretty life-changing at 16. I was like, yes, I absolutely love speaking to people in their own language. And I just really loved it. So lots of, you know, universities offered the option to study Portuguese at the same time, pick it up from scratch. So I thought that sounded fun. And as soon as I started Portuguese, I absolutely loved it. I think there was something about it that sparked my interest because it seemed a little bit like overlooked as a language, because I just always remember going to pick up my textbooks, you know, for my course, and they were filed under miscellaneous languages. And I was like, how is that possible? You know, it's, you know, really, really important language. So I think that kind of, you know, yeah, just really sparked something in me. And I thought even at that moment, right, I'm going to, you know, make this my thing. And I'm going to kind of spread my love for it. So I really started then, actually, in my first year of uni. I started the first Portuguese society. I was that much of a nerd that I decided that the university needed a Portuguese society. The Spanish society was thriving in with lots of people. So I was like, nope, okay, we need one for Portuguese as well. And yeah, so I organized a trip for the students in my first year. And that's when I very first went to Portugal. So I went to Porto back in 2006, which shows how old I am, even though I don't look it, I really am. And I just absolutely loved it. We had such an amazing time over those few days, getting to know Portugal, getting a feel for the culture, the history, the landscape, obviously the port wine. And I just thought, yeah, this is really special, and it's something that I really, really love. So kind of fast forward into my year abroad, I was actually supposed to go to Brazil for my year abroad. My university had a partnership with João Pessoa University in the northeast of Brazil. And I was super pumped. I was like, yes, I'm going to be there on the beach. I'm going to have a great time in Brazil. But I actually got ill and I couldn't go. I missed the start date. And I was absolutely broken about it. I was so, so upset. But the opportunity arose to go instead to Coimbra University. So the famous university in Portugal. One of the oldest in Europe. Somewhat reluctantly, I went there instead. But again, it was just exactly what I needed at exactly the right time. I fell in love with the country all over again. And I just was so welcomed. And it just felt so warm and so full of character. And again, it was just such a beautiful city on a river, so much history and culture there. So even at that point, I thought, okay, maybe somewhere down the line, I would like to live here. After doing all the traditional stuff when I was, kind of back in London, graduated, doing the first graduate jobs, and I worked in PR and marketing for about 7 years. And then the time rolled around again where I thought, is it time to move on from London? Where should I go? And Portugal again was there for me, and I thought, yeah, I'm going to check out Portugal. I'm going to check out Lisbon, see what it would be like to live there. So I came back in 2015. I spent the summer there with a friend doing the whole digital nomad thing, and immediately I thought, yeah, I could definitely live here. So I sort of started making plans to move, and so that was it. I moved over to Lisbon and haven't really looked back.
Wow, and how long have you been there for until now?
So it will be 4 years in April.
Fantastic. And did you have any jobs lined up or any ideas of what you might do when you got here? Or was it sort of just, let's just get there and figure it out?
Well, I was really lucky. The PR agency that I was working for at the time was already very well-versed in remote work. We were a small boutique agency and we did a lot of traveling. We did PR for global development clients. So we were often all across the globe, either doing field campaigns or, going to conferences all around the world. So our team was small and agile, and we were very used to kind of working from our laptops from wherever we were. So we never really had that kind of, office culture where you really needed to be in the office. So when I decided I wanted to move to Portugal for personal reasons, because I just felt like it was something that, I needed a change from London. I needed like some some different energy in my life. So I was really lucky that my boss at the time agreed to let me go on a kind of remote work basis. And then from there, I just kind of plugged into this whole different community of the digital nomad scene, people who were doing very entrepreneurial things. And also I started to see the need for all the people who were moving to Portugal. I started to see that they were really struggling to learn Portuguese. And I was having such a different experience to them because I didn't have that language barrier. I felt very comfortable, very at home in Portugal. I could get what I needed, get what I wanted. It kind of broke my heart a little bit to see people struggling with that. So I thought, maybe I could start teaching sometime. And that was an idea that kind of stayed in my head, for a year or two. Just coming up to 2 years ago now, I decided to kind of take the leap and leave that safe job and start, sharing my love for Portuguese again, but this time in the capacity as a teacher.
Wow. Well, first of all, congratulations for that. I think that's a huge achievement. And a really good job on taking that leap. And what a difference in culture that must be. I'm thinking like the busy London city life, everyone's overworked, and then thinking like the Portuguese kind of, let's say more, it's like more laid back lifestyle, you know. I'm thinking of sun and, like you said, port wine and beaches. And yeah. Find two more different ones.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing. I think it was definitely a change in culture in two ways. First of all, in the fact that I was living in a very different city. I mean, I'm from London, where, you know, everything is fast paced. And, you know, coming to Lisbon, it felt so small. Now when I go back to London, I get so stressed out. I'm like, oh my gosh, is that really the size of the tube map? I absolutely can't cope with that. Like, why is everything so far away? Why is everybody rushing everywhere? And I was never like that at all. It's just amazing how ingrained that kind of culture can become if you don't know any different. Now I feel very relaxed when I go back to Lisbon, and there's only four metro lines. You know, you can walk across the city if you want to. So that's great. And then also the work culture as well. So, you know, even though I'd moved to Lisbon, I was still very much working in a London agency. And I think I was really suffering from that kind of fatigue that a lot of digital nomads get of trying to keep up and kind of prove to your colleagues and to your boss that, like, you can still get the job done. So I noticed that I was so switched on all the time because I didn't want to miss an email. I didn't want to miss a phone call. I wanted to really prove that I was really on it. And that definitely took a toll. And I started to struggle with that quite a lot. And then, of course, as I mentioned, you know, I was in this community where, you know, people were doing all sorts of things. And I would think, oh, okay, you know, maybe it's something I could try. So it was definitely a slow kind of transition from one to the other, you know, first of all, adjusting to Lisbon and then adjusting to a kind of new career as well.
Right. And I would say that adjustment of moving abroad, I mean, you were obviously quite familiar with the culture, and having very solid language skills before you move is obviously a big help. But there's still 115 things you need to sort out when you move to a new country. So I imagine that stress doesn't help either.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I always say to my students when they're thinking about moving over. They think, oh, you know, I'll sort out my Portuguese when I get there. No, you are doing so many other things when you arrive. You'll have so many things to think about and stress about. So if you can actually, you know, start to tackle Portuguese before you arrive, you'll be glad you did. Because yeah, there's always a lot to adjust to. And I think I might have been a little bit complacent as well. The fact that I, you know, could speak Portuguese and that I had, you know, been very familiar with the country. But yeah, it's always challenging settling into a new place, for sure.
Yeah, and I had the experience early on with I moved to Hungary in 2015, and I wasn't expecting to move there, so I couldn't really, I had no time to prepare for it, and I knew nothing of Hungarian, and this was one of the most foreign languages you can find in Europe, and just the stress of, and I tried to tackle the language right away, you know, bought books on the very first week I was there, you know, trying to really get into it. But then just the idea of residences and taxes finding an apartment and all this just kind of, it just snowballed into a completely unmanageable situation. And actually, just for those who don't know, part of the reason that I've brought Liz on today is because I just moved to Portugal here a couple of months ago. I also didn't know I was moving to Portugal. So it's kind of my life is a bit weird, but this time I just accepted the fact that, you know what, it's going to take a couple of months. You know, I'm planning to live here for the next 5, 10, maybe longer years. So the fact that I don't start right away is not a problem. So, you know, now I've been here a couple of months, some of the admin is starting to get taken care of, so I can slowly move into, so to speaking. But it's definitely true that if I had known I was coming, I would have taken maybe a month or two at least and learned a lot of the basics, because that just gives you a huge head start and also in terms of confidence. So I totally agree with you that if anyone listening knows they're moving somewhere, you know, get started, get those basics, and you can always leverage that when you get there. But once you get there and you know nothing, man, is it tough to get out of that hole.
It's true. Yeah, I agree.
It's really tough. But you had great language skills coming in from your degree. Is that, do you think that was because of your special interest that you were so successful? I hear a lot of people who go to university for a degree, for language degrees, and they actually don't come out with that great of a conversational level. I mean, they might be able to read and maybe translate a text or something, but in terms of, talk on the streets, maybe not as successful.
Yeah, it's true. I definitely went to uni with some people who probably couldn't say two words to you today if you asked them to. I think, it was definitely due to my special interest. It is always something I've been good at. I think it's actually kind of the same part of your brain as music. That's also something that I've also really enjoyed. I've always been able to kind of copy things and do impressions of people and that kind of thing. So it was always something that I was good at, but also it kind of relates back to the fact that I did get ill halfway through my degree and I had to take a significant time out. And I think when I finally did go on my year abroad, I was just so worried about being behind that I threw myself into it so wholeheartedly. And that really is what you have to do with languages. Like you can read all the grammar books you want and memorize all the verbs that you want. But you're actually never going to make progress unless you force yourself to speak. And so the best thing I ever did for my language skills was moving in to a house share that was, six Portuguese girls, and most of them didn't speak much English. So I really, really had to force myself through that really uncomfortable stage of being really nervous to speak, but just having to get on with it. Otherwise, I wasn't going to get anywhere. So that's something that I always tell my students, that there's no kind of way around it. The only way is through it. And I think that that's also something that really helped me kind of get to the level that I'm at today.
Right. And today, not only do you teach students, you also have a YouTube channel called Talk the Streets.
Yes.
I guess we could talk a little bit about the kind of European Portuguese, because one of the reasons that I found your channel when I was searching was there doesn't seem to be too many resources for European Portuguese. Mm-hmm. So most people would be looking at Brazilian Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
So can you just explain to the listeners sort of, what's the difference between the two? Are they sort of mutually understand intelligible? What's the relationship between the two languages?
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it is the same language. And whenever I teach, I do try and be really inclusive about the fact that other forms of Portuguese do exist. The big comparison that people usually make is, oh, I guess it's the same as like American English and British English. But I actually think the differences are more pronounced than that. It's not just a matter of pronouncing things differently. You will find different grammar structures in Brazilian Portuguese as well. So in terms of whether they're mutually intelligible, the Portuguese have an easier time of understanding the Brazilians than the Brazilians have of understanding the European Portuguese speakers, because European Portuguese is so closed. It's a lot of closed vowels. It's a lot of sh sounds. So actually, if you see the two written down, you'll barely notice a difference. But if you hear the two being spoken, you will notice a big, big difference. And this is one of the reasons why it is a shame that there isn't more available for people learning Portuguese from Portugal. Is because if you're listening to Brazilian content, there's so much fantastic content out there teaching Brazilian Portuguese. And like I say, at the end of the day, it is the same language, but it's the listening that's really going to suffer for you, because it is more difficult to understand Portuguese from Portugal. So that's one of the things that I do say to my students. I'm really happy for people to consume content from Brazil, because there's so much amazing, TV and music and culture. But you do need to have, source material that you can listen to that is from Portugal, because that's kind of the main thing that you're going to find more difficult.
Yeah. Is there kind of a stereotypical word or phrase or like a saying that you would say, wow, okay, that's for sure Brazilian Portuguese or vice versa?
So I guess the difference is, you know, if you take the phrase good day, for example, or good morning, in the Brazilians will say bom dia with like a j sound. Mm. And in Portugal, we'll say bom dia. So, you know, the way things are pronounced, I've got so many funny stories of when I was in Brazil and I was trying to be understood. Like, for example, I was asking where, because it was a time when you still had internet cafes, right? Again, giving away how old I am. I was trying to find an internet cafe and I was saying internet, internet. They're like, what, what? And they're like, ah, internet, internet. And that's what I was looking for. To be honest, that's actually happened to me in America when I've asked for a glass of water and they were like, we don't sell that. And I was like, really? You don't sell water? So yeah, it's definitely more difficult. And I think, yeah, I think that actually if you in Brazil, you know, this cheesy soap opera that I watch in Portuguese from Portugal, it's actually dubbed in Brazil into Brazilian Portuguese.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
Yeah. You'll have to, or on the news, you might see a Portuguese person speaking with subtitles. So yeah, it's different, but I love both. And I do really encourage my students to consume Brazilian content, because you're going to meet tons of Brazilians here as well. And it's something you need to understand. But as I say, it really is the listening piece that I try and make sure that if they're a real beginner, that they're really focusing on tuning their ear into the way people speak in Portugal rather than in Brazil.
Yeah, I guess you want to build like a baseline that you can always adapt and add to later. But if you're learning two dialects, as it were, at once, then, I mean, you're not going to really be very consistent when you speak, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, another example from when I was in Brazil, like, if you want to say to somebody, oh, I get it, or I've got it, like, I know, I understand. In Portugal, you say, já percebi. Já percebi. But in Brazil, the word is entendi, which they will actually shorten to entendi. So when I was going around saying, ah, já percebi, they would be like, what is she saying? They were like, no, dude, this has got to change. Like, no one understands you. Can you? Yeah. So I when I was in Brazil, I had to switch things up pretty sharpish to be understood.
I like how someone who speaks English, you can just see so many cognates in Portuguese. That's very helpful. I guess it's similar to Spanish in that regard, that you recognize a lot of things. And as long as you don't run into too many false friends, I think you'll be okay with the cognates.
Yeah, absolutely. The false friends are funny sometimes. Also, like when things have a double meaning.
Right.
I love that as well. So I had a student who he has a Portuguese mother-in-law, and they were out in the garden, and he said, come and look at my tomatoes. And in Portugal, tomatoes, you know, can mean something different. So she was like, come and look at your what? So yeah, those types of situations are always unavoidable, no matter what language you're learning. But they never fail to amuse
me. So the translation for any British listeners would be, come and look at my plums, maybe.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So you might just imagine like a plum tree, and then you get the same situation. But yeah, it's funny. I saw a video with somebody talking about, was it, he wanted to ask about preservatives in the food.
Mm-hmm.
And was it preservativo or something? And it means condoms. So
exactly.
That's also not the most fortunate friend there. But for the ones you said, you know, perceive, you know. And,
exactly.
Yeah, it's manageable in a way. Like, and that's a big advantage. Like you really only need to try learning a language like Hungarian or Russian, or I mean, even Russian has some cognates, but or I imagine things like Chinese, and you know, when you have completely foreign languages, you get no help. But at least in Portuguese, I've noticed that there's so many cognates and so many common vocabulary words with Spanish and the other European languages that I'm finding that even without having done any formal study at all, some things like menus and descriptions and things and written in general, is understandable to a large degree. So I'm taking that as a big win coming from my last Hungarian experience, which was like, I might as well have been learning Martian or something, you know, completely foreign, no cognates at all. So
yes, hopefully Portuguese will be quite a bit easier for you.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. It's already going pretty well. But how long were you in Brazil for?
I was in Brazil for 6 months, yeah.
Okay, so that was just sort of a... did you have any kind of, was there a formal reason for the trip, or did you just want to see how the other half lives? So
yeah. So basically, as soon as I left university, I was so sad that I didn't get to go that I decided that before I did anything else, I had to go and experience it. And so, yeah, I was really lucky. I found an organization called ISEC, who organize exchange programs for students and people who'd recently graduated, and so I found like a teaching program with them, so I went over, and I was also able to go to the northeast of Brazil, which is where I was particularly interested in going, and yeah, so I was able to do that, and yeah, I didn't regret it at all. I had an absolute blast. I met such amazing people, and the funny thing is that because I'd learned European Portuguese first, and then I went over to Brazil, and I was saying all sorts of things, and they were like, could you not speak that way? Could you try and do it this way? Because we're finding it too funny. So, you know, and also I'm the kind of person who will naturally kind of morph into, like I said, copying what I hear other people say. So, you know, by the time I left Brazil, I very much spoke with Brazilian Portuguese. And then I decided to move to Lisbon a few years later, and then everything had to kind of switch back around the other way. So to be honest, my accent can get a little bit of a mixture sometimes. And when I speak to Brazilian friends, I can't not switch back to the way Brazilians speak. So yeah, it's a bit of an odd talent to have, because you would just learn one and stick to one. But as I say, they both have a very, very special place in my heart. So, and that's why I've had so much fun doing videos for YouTube, you know, where we look at those differences. And I have a Brazilian friend and a Portuguese friend, and we look at the differences in a very playful and mutually respectful way, which I think is the way it should be done.
Of course, yeah, that's absolutely no difference here between the languages. It's just well, it is a difference, but we're not placing anyone higher than the other, for sure.
Exactly, and that's the important
thing. I would say, in terms of, some people might ask, well, does it matter that there aren't that many European Portuguese resources, because you can just learn the Brazilian and then you will adapt to the Portuguese afterwards? But I would say the thing is, if you're going to live in Portugal, why not study that language? You know, it would be like moving to Sweden and learn Danish. You know, it's like, yeah, they're very similar languages, but why would you not study the language that you're actually going to use day to day?
It is the same language, but it's the fact that it's hard enough to get up the courage to go and ask somebody something, you're using the Brazilian vocabulary or the Brazilian way of forming things, you know, it's not going to be quite as easy for you to, maybe you'll be understood when you speak, but as I say, when you hear what's said back to you, you're going to think, well, that didn't sound anything like I was listening to on Duolingo, so you know what's happened. So that's why, you know, that's why I've been really trying to kind of help fill this gap, you know, in terms of materials online for learning Portuguese from Portugal. And I have to say that the reason why I call it European Portuguese, which lots of people don't like, is because that's the searchable term. And you know,
with European Portuguese?
Well, I mean, it's kind of like people will say, well, why don't you say, you know, European Spanish? And it's true, you know, Spanish is also spoken in lots of different parts of the world, and we don't call it European Spanish. But, you know, people prefer, I think people prefer Portuguese from Portugal, but it just sounds like a bit of a mouthful. So it is the thing that people are, you know, European Portuguese is what people are searching for. So that is what I kind of include so that I can actually show up for people. And the fact that you found me is very exciting because it seems like the algorithm is working for me on YouTube.
There you go. And I think you're doing a great job. I think you have great videos and you have a great on-screen persona, and your video quality and your editing and your graphics and everything is beautiful.
Oh, thanks so much.
you deserve a lot of credit for that. Was that something you learned as part of your stayed in the PR world?
Yeah, exactly. So I used to be the one running around conferences interviewing people and then kind of filming and editing that. So it was actually super fun to actually get the chance to build my own brand and film my own videos and really think to myself, you know, what, you know, if I'm doing this just for myself, how do I want this to look? So, you know, I owe so much to my previous job in the fact that I learned a lot of these skills in terms of marketing and video production. And I was able to kind of, you know, use that now for something that I really love and that I'm really passionate about.
Yeah, it's great. It's like a full circle almost, you know.
Yeah.
It's always coming to this. But I think that's great. But you decided to call it Talk the Streets. Is that part of your method, or can you explain a little bit where that came from?
Yeah, so basically I feel like the way that a language is spoken in the streets by real people isn't often taught in the classroom. So, you know, it's such a formulaic approach to kind of go to a class, you're given a textbook, you open it on the first page, you learn how to talk about where you're from. And, you know, I just thought, I don't want to teach like that, you know. I want to help people feel at home in Portugal. That's essentially what I want, you know, because that was the feeling that I got. And like I say, when I arrived and I saw that people were having a problem with this language barrier and not really feeling, you know, part of their community, they felt a bit detached, you know, that's what I wanted to fix. And so what do people want to learn? Well, they want to be able to greet the old lady who lives next door, or they want to be able to have a chat to the guy who always serves them their coffee each morning. So the kind of Portuguese that people speak on the streets, that's what I want to be teaching people. So that was where the kind of the idea for the name came from. And that's why a lot of, you know, my videos that I do for YouTube, they're all focused on, you know, colloquial Portuguese and kind of real life situations. So before coronavirus happened, I was doing lots of, you know, kind of dialogues. I did one in the dentist, in the hairdressers, in the coffee shop. And those are the things that I really love, you know, those kind of things that you're not necessarily going to be taught at a traditional language school. And so really what I want to help people learn are the things that they're going to need in their everyday life.
Great. Yeah. And obviously in these times, everything is a little bit sad. And I think a country like Portugal is the culture is very open and very social. Yeah. So having these lockdowns, I think it hits much harder here than it does, let's say, the UK, where people are slightly more distanced from each other. I mean, they might have after work drinks and stuff, but you go home to your own houses and, you know, there's a lot of sort of isolation there anyway. So definitely in the Scandinavian countries. So it feels, you know, obviously everyone's talked about this for months and years, and there's no need to kind of dwell on it. But I would say it feels like it's hit hard here.
Yeah, and it's true. And that's one of the reasons why people love living in Portugal and why people like myself do come to Portugal to live, because if we're from countries like the UK where you know, we don't get that many days of sunshine, but in Portugal we can essentially live our lives out in the open. The cafe culture, you know Lisbon or Porto, you know, these amazing you know, riverside cities, There's just something so special about that, where everybody's, you know, sitting out in the open, having a drink. It really is one of the things that I love the most about Portugal. So I really, really can't wait for it to get back to normal, and, you know, not just for myself, but for the businesses that rely on that as well.
That's it, yeah. The tourism industry and everything. One of the things, of course, Portugal is quite famous for in the UK is a retirement, you know, mm-hmm. what the what is it the Silver Coast or the, was that in Spain? Anyway, down by the Algarve. And
the Algarve is like, it's so funny because you come down to the Algarve and you see so many British people. Yeah, fish and chips. Like, I haven't ever eaten fish and chips in Portugal. And then I came to the Algarve and I was like, oh, you can actually buy this here. And the supermarkets are all stocked with things like baked beans and sausages and cheddar cheese. I cannot get cheddar cheese in Lisbon. And it really upsets me. They have like a whole wall of cheese. And I'm like, but there's no cheddar. But yeah, come down to the Algarve and you'll find all of that stuff. It's really funny.
Yeah, I think I found I don't know if you have Pingo Doce down there, but they have like some kind of imitation home brand. And I don't know how they can call that cheddar. It seems a little bit shady, but it was definitely not the cheddar experience you're getting.
No, you need the Cathedral City or the Kerrygold. Nothing else will do.
Right. Yeah. And is that, are there things like that you miss from home?
Not really. I mean, yeah, I have a very boring kind of shopping list of things that I will pick up and bring back with me. But, you know, if I looked hard enough, I probably could find it. But I wouldn't say that there's anything that I miss in, you know, in the UK that I could buy. It's more the fact that, like, oh, I quite like to go to the pub with my friends, you know, or, you know, I'd love to see my family. Christmas time, obviously, I love going home. Not so much this year because everything was shut, but, you know, the London does do Christmas well and things like this, kind of more the atmosphere. But, you know, COVID aside, that's why I think as well, lots of people choose Lisbon because, or not just Lisbon, but Portugal in general, because it is quick to hop back if you're from somewhere else in Europe. So you can get those you know, home comforts, or though, you know, that atmosphere and the people that you miss without too much trouble.
Yeah, and I guess obviously being in the EU for a little while, for anyone listening who does have that EU passport, it's, you know,
all right, easy don't to rub get it in. Here. And,
well, you must be naturalized soon.
Sorry?
You must be able to get the Portuguese passport soon.
Yes, yeah, one more year. I pass the Portuguese test, but I'm pretty sure that that will go well.
I mean, if you don't, then maybe you should just shut the channel down.
I'll just quit. Yeah, I'll just be like, guys, I'm a fraud. Yeah.
Yeah. Go into the music thing, maybe that's better for you. I don't know, in that case.
No, I'm kidding. I'm pretty confident that that won't be a problem.
That's the easy part. Maybe the history. Do they have history requirements in the test?
I don't know. The only thing, I haven't looked into it in great deal, but yeah, when it comes up to next year, then I'll do all that research and I'll definitely make a bunch of videos about that, because I'm sure that would be really interesting for people to see about, you know, going through that whole citizenship process.
Get the content out there as well, you know, the content creation.
All about the content.
Yeah, no, I mean, great thinking, because honestly, that is super helpful. And there's so much, you know, when I moved here, I was Googling all the time, and yeah, it's really hard to find reliable information about a lot of things. So that's definitely a good shout to document that journey as well.
Yes, and I'm also, well, I was supposed to be getting married later this year, but we're going to be postponing it for the second time. So now I'll be getting married next June. So I'm also looking forward to doing some videos about what it's like to plan a wedding in Portugal, because I know that it is a popular destination for that as well. So that will be really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of ideas. And in terms of the language ideas, How do you start out as a teacher? Because obviously, being a student, a passionate student of the language, doesn't really necessarily translate into teaching.
Absolutely.
So how did you start that? And did you take any of those formal courses? What are they called, the CELTA? Or no, that's an English degree, isn't it? You know what I'm talking about.
Like, yeah, I know what you mean. So I started small, really, because I mean, by the time I got around to teaching, I already had been in the community for a couple of years, and people knew that I spoke Portuguese well. And so it was kind of something that I'd been asked about a lot, like, oh, could you help me? Or do you teach? And in the end, I thought, you know, I should just give this a go. And so I got together a small group of people of six, and I really just tested it out. And I went back to my own experience and thought, well, what's the way that I wish? To be fair, I had excellent teaching at university, so I thought, well, we started with this, and then we went on to that. And actually, if I'd have done this at this stage, then this would have been easier to understand. So it was all very much kind of based on my own experience, and also the fact that. Most of the people I'm teaching either have English as a first language or, they're very, very good at English. So coming at it from that perspective of somebody who's gone through learning and who understands where native English speakers might have trouble, I think has also really kind of helped me stand out as a teacher. And so it was really a case for about a year of just sort of teaching small groups, doing workshops in Lisbon, and really testing out and seeing what people found helpful, what things I could have explained a bit better, or what's the order I could have changed around, and things like that. And until after kind of a year and a half, I was really kind of ready to put together a full course.
All right, fantastic. And in this kind of digital world with Zoom and Skype and everything, I mean, you can go on a place like iTalki and find, I don't know how many Portuguese teachers there are on there, but I imagine quite a few. You decide to do an in-person event or setup rather than was that a deliberate decision, or was it just, let's try this first and let's move it online afterwards? Or did you always want to just do it in person?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely a people person. And so kind of doing things in person, I really just wanted to get started. And there were so many people on my doorstep in Lisbon who wanted to learn that it wasn't too hard for me to kind of get kind of groups together, run workshops and that type of thing. So I really kind of enjoy that kind of in-person classroom dynamic. Even before coronavirus became a thing, my plan was to move online purely because I could help more people that way. As I say, lots of my students are people who are planning to relocate to Portugal but want to get their Portuguese started first. And I guess the fact that, well, coronavirus happened, and then Portugal is still such a popular place for people to be coming to, and also there really isn't that much out there online for European Portuguese, I think all of those things kind of worked in my favor. And I started with the YouTube channel thinking like, okay, well, let's see how this goes and if anyone's actually interested and what kind of traction I can get from doing this. And it really, I couldn't have imagined how quickly it would start to, it would start to grow. So yeah, I mean, I started exactly a year ago actually on YouTube, and now I'm at just over 16,000 subscribers. So from there, it was really exciting to kind of build on that and kind of put together my online course, because to be honest, this time last year, we went into our first lockdown in Portugal and there really wasn't another option. So it was like, okay, yeah. I was planning to do an online course. Now it looks like I'm going to go and do that. So yeah, I just kind of worked like crazy, crazy hard to get a course together based on everything that I had learned from my in-person teaching. And I think that testing stage is so, so important, just to get some exposure of teaching and seeing if you enjoy it and seeing if people are responding to it and, what kind of things, people need to learn or things that you need to change. So by the time it came to putting together my online course, I had a really, really good idea of what it should look like.
Fantastic. And I also wanted to talk a little bit about that kind of process. But first, I guess we should just quickly mention that all the your channel and your website and the course, everything is going to be in description, and you have a one URL for the listeners that they can check out as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's talkthestreets.com/pro, so /PRO. The name of my course is Portuguese Pro. So if you're interested,
perfect. Yeah,
that's where you find it.
Yeah, I just wanted to get that in there as well. And so for me, it seems like the model is basically. So first of all, you give tremendous value in these videos. I mean, they could be five courses themselves. So you're kind of giving away a lot of the secrets, so to speak. But so the way I see it is, you create these great videos. People get to know you. They see mm-hmm. your teaching style.
Mm.
And then they trust and like you. Yeah. So they reach out and say, hey, can you help me either one-on-one or with a more, let's say, formal or organized program?
Mm.
And then you say to them, hey, here's my pro program.
Yeah.
That's more or less it.
Yeah. So my whole marketing strategy is YouTube. And I invested a lot in kind of learning how it worked, and, you know, researching how I could actually show up in the algorithm and things like that. And that was really, really fundamental to actually being seen. Because like mm-hmm. you said, there's lots of teachers out there. There weren't necessarily that many people on YouTube at the time that I was doing it a year ago. Lots of people have cropped up now, which is exciting that more people are starting to create more content, because that can only be good for the people who want to learn. So yeah, YouTube, getting YouTube off the ground was really fundamental for me to actually, you know, so that people could actually kind of discover me. And people, you know, I was blown away by the comments of people saying like, oh my God, you're like a unicorn, you know, you're a native English speaker, but so you know exactly what we need to know, but you explain things so clearly. And so yeah, from there, people will kind of come into my kind of community. And yeah, so now I don't do one-on-one anymore, but I do have this kind of group program, as I mentioned, Portuguese Pro, where I'm able to kind of help so many more people. And it's just so exciting to see the progress that they make. You know, when people come into the program, they say like, I just want to be able to speak to my neighbors and I can't understand a word anyone says to me. And it's so frustrating and it's so demoralizing. And it is just a case of demystifying it and explaining it in a way that, you know, is going to click for people. And also just giving them the encouragement and the confidence to actually try. That's also a big part of the battle as well. As I'm sure you know, with languages, it's a huge mindset game. And so to kind of have support from someone like myself, that's also a really, really huge thing.
Yeah. So for any either language teachers or aspiring language teachers out there, you know, have a look at YouTube and try and incorporate that into your own teaching business. And, you know, that's a good tip, I would say.
Definitely.
It's a great platform.
Yeah. The only thing I would say I have two big pieces of advice. If you're thinking about starting YouTube, number one is look at what's already out there for your language and work out how you're going to be different. So mm-hmm. for me, it was the fact that it was two things. It was the fact that I was coming from it from the perspective of a native English speaker who has learned to speak Portuguese. That gives me a slightly different edge. And also the fact that I was very focused on practical Portuguese. That was what I was convinced I wanted to help people learn. So that in a sense helped my content stand out. The second thing that you should do is definitely invest in a course that is going to actually teach you how to show up, because it's one thing if you spend all this time and effort making a beautiful video and then nobody finds you, because, you know, YouTube is a search engine. So you need to kind of understand how to produce your videos, how to choose your topics, how to do your keywords, all of things like this, you know, so that you can show up on the first page when people search for your language. So those are my two big tips for anyone thinking of starting YouTube for languages.
Fantastic. And I think you know, obviously we can't say that YouTube is exactly a new platform anymore, but I think any doubts that it was ever a MySpace kind of deal is quickly evaporated.
Yeah, I think it's here
to stay. Yeah, exactly. I think and this idea goes along with the idea that, is it too late to YouTube? Of course not. You know, it's only growing. The platform's mm-hmm. only getting bigger. So get on that. But just one final thing I wanted to just talk to you about is what kind of challenges do you see native English speakers having the most with Portuguese?
To be honest,
I mean, I'm not a native English speaker, but I suspect maybe the things will apply for me as well.
Well, to be honest, what I see native English speakers struggling with the most is the fact that lots of people didn't learn a language to any degree before. So yes, you know, you might learn French or Spanish at school, but it's not taught very well, unfortunately, inside the UK system. So people often come to me with like, oh, I'm just terrible at languages, or I've never enjoyed learning languages. Mm. And it is because of the way it was taught. So that kind of also breaks my heart a little bit. And I'm like, no, trust me, we can do this. So, you know, people, unlike other places in Europe where, you know, you learn other languages and you become familiar with the process and also the vocabulary that you need in terms of understanding the structure of a language, you know, English people that I teach, you know, don't have a great knowledge of grammar because it's not something that, you know, that they've covered, you know, for a long time, a lot of the time. Of course, not everybody, but that's something that I see as a trend generally. People come to me and saying, I'm just not good at languages. And that's because, unfortunately, inside the UK system, languages just isn't something that's prioritized. So that's one thing, but obviously it's not, you know, specific to Portuguese. In terms of what's specific to Portuguese, it's very much the pronunciation. So the stuff that we were talking about earlier, you know, people really struggle with European Portuguese pronunciation because, as I mentioned, it's a lot of closed vowels, it's a lot of sh sounds, and really you just need to kind of that's what I always start with within my program. Pronunciation is the absolute first thing that we start with because it's your foundation for really actually being understood and understanding when people speak to you. So particularly the nasal sound. So like in Portuguese, when a word ends in M, it's not a m sound. So the word for yes is sim, which is S-I-M. And so I will hear people saying sim. Or the word for good is bom, which is B-O-M. So I hear people saying bom, bom dia. And it's like, no one's dropping bombs. It's not a bomb. So, you know, you need to learn to understand these rules of where the nasal vowels come. So any word ending in M, the previous vowel needs to be nasalized. So instead of saying a M sound at the end of bom, I need to nasalize the O. So instead of saying bom, it's going to sound like this, bom. And that's something that people really struggle with because it's not a sound that we have to make in English. So probably, you know, being able to navigate grammar and also being able to kind of make the sounds that are very specific to European Portuguese, those are two pretty major challenges.
Right. Yeah, I don't think my Portuguese pronunciation understanding is good enough to tell the difference. But to me, it just sounds like kind of like the French, like bon. You know, a little bit. It sounds like an N sound rather than an M.
It does because you're kind of like screwing up your nose and making that sound. it's gonna naturally sound more like an N than an M. But definitely, if you see a word ending in M in Portuguese, it's not a M sound.
Right. Yeah. I learned that pretty quickly. And yeah. I guess it's just annoying in a way. I know languages are fairly irrational. You know, they're not meant to be logical, but as a learner it's just annoying when you see like, oh, it's spelled with an M but it has no M sound. Okay, great.
Yeah.
But,
I don't think it's not as annoying as French. There's a lot of confusing letters in French.
Oh yeah, and I'm sure if you're learning English from scratch as well, you're just confused about every single pronunciation as well.
Silent letters.
I think there should be more content about that, actually, the frustrations of learning English pronunciation, because that's a minefield.
But that's what's so funny about when people are learning the language, because we don't really think about the way our own language works at all, because it's second nature to us. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why sometimes just because somebody's a native speaker, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be really great at teaching the language, because they don't, you know, they may not see reasons why things are the way they are. When people say to me, oh, but that's so confusing, and I think, well, think about how it works in English. Is it that straightforward in English? No, you're just really used to using it and it becomes second nature. So
now I'm looking forward to getting more involved and learning some more Portuguese and I guess, what do you call it, be more integrated into society and you know, assimilated to the language and culture. I'm sure that brings a lot of benefit in terms of enjoyment.
Absolutely. You have a completely different experience. You know, so much opens up to you, not just in terms of the things that you can experience, but the people that you meet and the people that you get to speak to. And, you know, one of my favorite people in Portugal is my neighbor who lives downstairs. And I would have been lost so many times without her. But she doesn't speak any English. So, you know, it's a really, really special relationship that I just wouldn't have if I didn't speak Portuguese. So it's definitely one of the reasons why I teach, is that I want other people to have those experiences too.
Fantastic. And that's obviously the agenda we're trying to push with this podcast, and bringing people like yourself on to help spread and share that message. It's what it's all about. So thank you for coming on and sharing your experience and your tips and tricks with all the language learners listening to the podcast.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
And finally, where can people find you? We've mentioned a couple of places, but do you want to just repeat it one last time?
Sure. So you'll find me on YouTube. It's youtube.com/talkthestreets. To be honest, if you type in European Portuguese, I should show up. You'll see my face. And also talkthestreets.com. So talkthestreets.com/pro, as I mentioned before, P-R-O. That's where you will be able to find out more about my course. So I would love to see some of your listeners there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Actual Fluency Podcast. If you have any suggestions for people we could bring on to interview, or you want to be part of the podcast, don't hesitate to send me a message, chris@actualfluency.com. I want to give a thanks to our sponsor, Optilingo, which is a cool app that focuses on speaking from the beginning, and it's available in a ton of different languages, so I'm sure you'll find one or more languages that suit you. It's great for people who want to avoid boring drills and memorizing endless grammar tables and definitions. So if you want to give it a try, go to optilingo.com. That's optilingo.com.